You know, I just was sitting here looking at my group, and I have fallen in love with my group. And I thought, you know, if I had time with each woman here, I would fall in love with you too. It just happens, doesn't it, when we love the Lord and we spend time together and we really get to see who each other are. And so it's just great to be here and do this. You know, I studied a lot for this, and I have taught it like 5 different ways in my head because there's so many different parts of this that's so good. And I'm not quite sure what the Lord has in mind yet, so I'll just kind of start out talking about the scripture that we had, Vanessa had printed out before from Matthew 5, where it says, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up to the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth, and he began to teach to them, saying, and I think that this really struck me, that Matthew wanted to tell us that these were Jesus' words. And there was something so powerful to me, thinking that these, actually not in English, of course, but these were the words that Jesus spoke. And I think that has a lot of weight and a lot of power. And it makes me want to really listen to what he has to say. The time that this all happened, you know, there had been 400 years of silence. After Malachi, there hadn't been any prophets. There had been no voices. God purposely made it a silent season for Israel. And during that time, the Pharisees became quite the head of the church of the Israelites. Whoops, sorry. So that, you know, they kind of lost their heart for God. It became about keeping the law. It became about doing everything right and discussing and arguing over the fine points of the law and what was the right thing to do and what was the wrong thing to do. And they lost all of the heart for what God had in mind in a relationship with his people. So at this particular time, this is at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. He just picked his disciples. And, you know, I think it's interesting to see that the crowds were already gathering because the words that he had to say were filled with life and filled with hope. And that's what he has for us. Is life and hope and goodness and righteousness and wholeness. And that's what he offers to us when we are in a relationship with him. The Sermon on the Mount has been called the Christian Manifesto of Jesus' kingdom. It unveils the foundations of the characters of that kingdom, and the crowds began flocking. And so I was just thinking about if he were here today, just imagine him actually telling us what he's saying. He's telling, how poetic of him to use contrasts to tell us what his kingdom is about. Kind of using a paradox to express, and I got this from the Pictorial Encyclopedia of the Bible by Zondervan, and he says, he's talking about wealthy paupers, happy mourners, unaggressive conquerors, lusting saints, self-effacing, enriching benefactors, realistic visionaries, militant pacifists, and winning losers. How interesting that he used that to teach us. You know, I mean, they must have been sitting there going, what? You're blessed if you hunger and thirst. That makes you blessed. That's where we are today. It's talking about blessed are you if you hunger and thirst for righteousness, for you shall be satisfied. So we've got 5 words that are important words: blessed, hunger, thirst, righteousness, and satisfied. So we've talked a lot about blessed over the last couple of weeks, and I found a little bit more just not even looking for it. It was like I was reading another book on Christmas, and here was this right here on Blessed, and so I want to read it to you. It's written by Tim Keller, and it's from a book called, dear God, what is it? Sorry, The Gift of Christmas. There it is. Okay, he says, in the Hebrew and Greek scriptures, the word meant something much deeper than that. Blessed is so limp and lightweight. To be blessed brings you back to something he calls full shalom, full human functioning. It makes you in everything God meant you to be. To be blessed is to be strengthened and repaired in every one of your human capacities, to be utterly transformed. This reminded me, I'm sure he must have gotten it from Ephesians 1 that talks about we're blessed with every blessing in the heavenlies. And so we possess, when we come into a relationship with Jesus, we are blessed, we become righteous, but it's something that's going to get filled in over time. I think it's kind of like you draw the outline of a life, and then over time you fill in all the details of it, and that righteousness then grows. I think blessed is very much the same way. So we were created by God to be in relationship with Him. And there, if we're not, we don't find that relationship with Him, you know, when we become hungry and thirsty in righteousness, if we don't fill that with Him, we look other places. And many times, you know, we're involved with Step Closer, the recovery ministry here. And it's a room filled with dear people who know that they need God. You know, many times, especially if you've been a believer for a long time, you can lose that sense that you're so desperate to know Him. You're desperate for life. And these are people who know that. They know they're not perfect. They know they have messed up. And they have found a relationship with Jesus, and that has changed everything in their life. And it's wonderful to be there and be a part of it. By the way, I'm not in recovery from alcohol and drugs, as many of them are. I'm in recovery from false idols. I'm in recovery from looking at other things to fill me up with what my heart longs for. And so that's what I do where do we go when our hearts are longing for something and we can't pinpoint it? And, you know, if you know you need something, where do you go? What do you do when you feel like some inner hunger, inner longing, and you forget that it's really Jesus that you want? I mean, we talked about it before, I'll find myself online looking for the perfect pair of shoes. And after, you know, an hour of searching high and low, I'll go, wait a minute, what are you doing? What's really going on here? Do you so much need this perfect pair of shoes, or is there something going on in your heart that you're not paying attention to? Is there something that's hurting you that you're not paying attention to? What's happening? And so that, if you all know your area, you know, whatever it is, and in of itself, it's not a bad thing. But it's like when you're using that to fill those soul holes in your heart, then it's something to pay attention to. So what is righteousness? Let me tell you what it is not. It is not keeping all of the rules. It is not being a good person. It is not doing everything right. It is not disappointing your mother. Because I do that all the time. There's no way that I can ever make my mother happy. It doesn't matter how hard I try to make my mother happy, it's never good enough, and she always wants more after that. So, you know, it's not attainable. So I have to stay real clear on that with God and me. I had that experience yesterday. Do you know that she might die soon? That's what she told me, why, you know, I need to be there more for her. So, yeah, poor thing, bless her heart. She's 90, but she's always been this way. I can't give her the excuse of being 90. It's just the way she is. So anyway, let me read you this from the Message, from Romans 3, let me just read it. Okay, it says, what Moses and the prophets witnessed to all those years has happened. The God setting things right that we read about has become Jesus setting things right for us. And not only for us, but for everyone who believes in him. For there is no difference between us and them in this. Since we have compiled this long and sorry record as sinners, both us and them, and proved that we are utterly incapable of living the glorious lives God wills for us, God did it for us. Out of sheer generosity, he put us in right standing with himself, a pure gift. He got us out of the mess we're in and restored us to where he always wanted us to be. And he did it by means of Jesus Christ. God sacrificed Jesus on the altar of the world to clear us, to clear that world of sin. Having faith in him sets us in that clear. Beautiful. So we're talking about righteousness. Righteousness is being right with God. Hungering and thirsting we'll go into in a minute, but let's talk about righteousness. It's being right in right standing with God, and that comes from a relationship with Jesus. It is the intention of our holy God that his children should be holy, and he gives us that holiness as we surrender to the Lord. Holiness is where it starts, and righteousness is the lived out part of holiness. Holiness is if you had like PowerPoint, you would have one little screen over here that had God and holy, and over here you'd have us and not holy. And the only way you can like join the two together and bring holy over to our screen would be to come into a relationship with Jesus. And that will make us holy. But it is not a human quality. It's only a God quality. And because he loves us, he wants to give us that. And all it takes is receiving that in a relationship with him. So let's talk about hungering and thirsting. This hunger, I guess in recent years I've heard that there's more hungry Americans. I just need to get my drink over here. But I'm wondering, you know, they're saying there are more hungry Americans right now talking about food. And, excuse me. But I don't know if Americans really know what hunger really is, that food kind of hunger. Because we live in such, or we have lived in such a wealthy country. But the kind of hunger that we're talking about here is the kind of hunger that of the people that you would see in concentration camps during the Second World War. Completely and utterly hungry. No food for a long period of time. And this was a picture of what was going on with the people at the time that Jesus was speaking. There was a huge lack of spiritual food, and there was a huge hunger in their hearts, and until now didn't know how were they going to get it filled. So I was thinking about the hunger and thirst, and you know, why would he say hunger and thirst? Why that? And I was thinking the hunger part seemed to me like, you know, you're eating food. And food feeds your body, and it gives you strength. It's like it gives you the what you need for the course of life. And so to me, that meant that the hunger portion had to do with the longing to be fed in the big items of our hearts, of identity and worth and value. And the thirsting part, it's a picture of someone like on a desert, in a desert walking without water for long periods of time, that kind of thirst. The thirst was reminded me of being refreshed and renewed. So there's the worth and value kind of thing that's met through when you're hungry. and then the refreshment and the you know, the that type of thing for the thirst part, the liquid part. If you can recognize that you're hungry, you're in a good place. You know, many people aren't even in touch with the fact that they're hungry. I mean, my mother, I'm not kidding, has read the Bible every single day of her life, but it has never penetrated her heart. I mean, it's quite sad. It's really sad, but it just, she reads it, she doesn't get anything from it, she doesn't remember what she's read, and it doesn't, but you know, then I know her mother wasn't a very nice person, and that my mother didn't receive a lot from her. So, you know, it goes back, right, all the way back to Eve. But so that my mother would never be able to recognize her own hunger and her own thirst for righteousness. She just knows that she's not happy and it's your fault, whoever happens to be there. It's sad, you know, that's an ongoing issue for me. I'm sure over the years I've taught at different times and have brought it up. But just on a good part, what God has shown me is because of the mother that I had, I have a deep hunger and a thirst for righteousness. I long to know God. I long to be filled. I long to understand spiritual truth because I had such a void inside. You know, Judy also said that I should tell you something about myself. I deal with chronic pain. Johnny Erickson Tata and I had the same accident, and she dove into a lake and hit her head on the bottom. I dove into a 6-foot swimming pool with my hands at the side and hit my head on the bottom. And I met Johnny one time, and we were talking about our mutual accident, and we figured out that I hit my head here and she hit her head back here. You know, it was about an inch apart, and she ended up a quadriplegic and I just ended up with spinal problems. And so this is one of the ways that God keeps me hungry. He allowed it in my life. It was an accident, but it was an accident that God allowed, because even though I couldn't see it at the time, maybe I couldn't see it for 20 years or 30 years later, it was an accident that he allowed because it was an issue that he wanted to use in my life to do something good with me. So he keeps me in close to him because I need to be close to him to have hope, to have life, to have the will to continue on and moving forward in my life. And so, you know, it's a wonderful place to be. It also was part of what changed my husband's and my relationship, was that after my first back surgery, my life fell apart, and I thought it was all his fault. I mean, does that sound like someone you know, like my mother? I learned that well. You know, if there's ever a problem, it's probably your fault. So, you know, Ed happened to be there, it was his fault. So you'd say that jokingly, you know. So we went to counseling, and we worked. It was after marriage of 25 years, and we learned, you know what? Had it not been for the surgery and the life falling apart, we probably would never have gone to counseling, and that was the change of everything in our relationship. And, you know, and it continues to grow today, but that was how it all began. So we say thank God for bad backs, because God uses them to do good things in people's lives, and he allows these hard circumstances in our lives to create the need for him. Now we can choose if we're going to go to him and allow him to fill us up, or we can go to other things, you know, to alcohol, to drugs, to shopping, to approval, to wanting people to fill the soul holes in our heart that only God can fill. And so we're going to look in all the wrong places to be loved instead of to him. The other thing that the pain issue does, I go to a pain clinic, I get help. So, you know, and I don't need any sympathy. That's why I don't really like to talk about it, because I don't need to be asked how I'm doing or anything, really. Just understanding if I'm grumpy, that's all I ask. If I don't look at you and smile and say, you know, good morning, and I might not be like at the top of my game that day, just say she probably doesn't feel good today. So I won't use it as an excuse, I promise. But you know, that's the other way, is that God uses it in my life, is that it breaks my heart, that it makes me grumpy. And you know, I don't like who I am when I don't feel good, because I can't care so much for you. You know, when you hit your finger with a hammer, what do? You grab it and you hold it. So when you are in pain, you want to hold it and make it feel better, but that's okay for a short time. Then you have to find a way to focus out here again, because that's how you get through it. You bring it to God and you ask him to use it in your life, and I go to him and say, you and me and I and you, and you know, connect with him and let him comfort me in that. So now maybe you know me just a little bit better if I'm different some days from other days. And the goodness of God to allow it, to use it in my life. So let's see where we are here. I had something. I found this old book called Unconditional Love. I've had it for 40 years. It was written by John Powell. Let's see what it says, because I know it fits in here somewhere. So let's go there and see how it does. It's important to read it, okay? So he was talking to the Pharisees. He says, he paraphrased it obviously. He says he was telling them something like this: don't deal with God legalistically. It's going back to what righteous is not. And it said, that's the way you deal with someone you fear. You worry about the punishments of an authority whom you fear, so you do everything he demands, and then you feel safe. Then you can say, I have done everything you demanded. You cannot punish me now. This is not really a yes of love to either God or neighbor. It is really a small and frightened person saying an emphatic no to personal insecurity. God is not calling you to this fearful submission, but rather to love him with your whole mind and heart and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. And I'm going to read on just because I read on and I thought it was so good. So, but they didn't understand, and it really wouldn't have been so bad, they whispered to each other, if only he weren't so soft on sinners. He kept associating with tax collectors and prostitutes, and he kept eating and drinking with socially, if not totally, disreputable people. He thought of himself as some kind of good shepherd in love with and in search of straying sheep. He said he was the divine physician, who did not come for the healthy and wealthy, but for the poor, the sick, and the needy. He once scandalized the whole self-righteous set when he allowed a prostitute to cry all over his feet and then to dry them with her bleached hair at the house of Simon the Pharisee. The worst part was that he then praised her for that. Get this, love. He said that wherever the story of his life were told down through the centuries and to the ends of the earth, the story of that woman and what she did for him would be told. It was just too much. So a very good book. It's about 40 years old, and it's excellent, an excellent book to read. So it helps us to see what righteousness looks like and what it doesn't look like. So that if you are finding that you're trying to keep some written code, some law that, you know, perhaps was in your family or some part of some tradition because you were taught that this was right. Well, probably what you're doing is a nice thing, but doing good things is to flow out of what's going on inside. So it's important to have that relationship with Jesus and then have his life show on the outside through our behavior. And that's what righteousness looks like. So desire for righteousness flows from need. That was placed there by God. It is fed by circumstances. It begins with a relationship to Jesus and it grows like a fatted calf. Isn't that interesting? I thought that was a great way to look at it, that they used to fatten a calf before a celebration, and that's what growing in righteousness looks like. It's like growing a fatted calf. I mean, it's the first time I'd want to be fat. Really fat, one of those big fat ones. So, okay, let's see, what else do we have here? So we're just about at the end of it. I thought it was interesting. This was one other interesting point, was at the beginning of his ministry was the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes, and then at the end of his ministry, at the Last Supper, he is talking about, it's when he was doing communion with them, and he was talking about, let's see, I've lost my words here. Oh, that, oh my dear, what happened to it? Oh, here it is. He says, "This take and eat the bread, this is my body which is broken for you, and to drink from my blood of the covenant poured out for many for forgiveness of sins." So that is where he is showing us all, you know, at the end of his ministry, this is how it's all going to happen. It's going to happen through a relationship with Jesus. But if you want to also know what righteousness looks like, look at his life. Go back and read through the Gospels and look at the different circumstances that occurred. The woman at the well, at, you know, raising Lazarus from the dead, his heart of compassion for them. If you look at when he healed Jairus' daughter and all of the people that he healed, just all of the kindness, the way that he lived, it shows us what righteousness looks like. And I think that helps us to see how he wants to work in our life and how righteousness looks. So the desire for righteousness, it will be satisfied through relationship with Jesus. It's as I taught at the beginning of the year of, let's see, what does it say on there? Lost it. Let's see. I am the vine, and you are the branches. He who abides in me, and I in her, shall bear much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. So it's staying connected to the vine. And he'll do everything else. And that's how righteousness grows. I want to just close up by saying that blessed are we if we're hungry. Are you in touch with your own heart of hunger? Are you in touch of where you go when you're hungry and you're not going to God to fill that place in your heart? Pay attention to what you're feeling and why you're doing what you're doing. And the Lord can change that in you. Because Jesus wants to fill us with himself, and he wants to make us righteous and whole people through relationship with him and staying connected to him. So blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. So I have a song I wanted to play. It's an old, old hymn. I don't know if it'll come up here. I don't know, Vanessa.